to this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lavo. Folks, the Florida swing continues, always one of the most difficult tests of the year. There's always wind. It always signals the arrival, if not spring, Rex, maybe even a little bit of summer as well. We always have dead putting surfaces by the weekend. It sounds like things are already a little bit spicy on that front to begin tournament week. Some new runoff areas around the greens, which will add to the difficulty as well. You appear to be on a tennis court, which I believe is just outside the media center at Bay Hill. Rex, what are the vibes like at Arnie's place?
It's a tennis court, but it's a converted pickleball court. I thought you would notice that. They see the pickleball net.
26, yeah. Baby. Of course it
That's
is.
That's right. That's right. Pickleball isn't just for old people anymore, so says Ryan Lavner.
You got hurt last time you played pickleball, I believe. That was probably the last time you were on a court.
That probably is the last time I was on a court. I need to clear up some things because I've been catching some strays when it comes to my take when it comes to Arnold Palmer Invitational. As you've pointed out on numerous occasions, it's a home game. As I've pointed out on numerous occasions, this is my least favorite event on the PGA Tour. But to be fair, it has nothing to do with the Arnold Palmer Invitational, the officials who are here, the tournament, the legacy that is Arnold Palmer, everything that goes into it. This has nothing to do with it. First and foremost, it's the longest commute of the year for me because I live on the other side of Orlando, which is about 45 minutes away. That's not on the Arnold Palmer Invitational. I chose to live there because, quite frankly, it's a better school district. Brantley. Go Brantley. So that one's not on the tournament either. I will also say I've complained about the parking here. My parking's right outside the media center right now. They have fixed that a few years ago. So Liz, thank you so much. Dana, thank you so much for that. I complained about the food in the media center. Can't do that anymore. It's really good. They have barbecue.
Historically bad previously.
It's not. And I had this conversation with a couple of our colleagues, Bob Herrick from SI, Doug Ferguson from AP. I don't even think it's in the bottom five anymore. I think it is squarely out of the basement at this point. So my three biggest hangups when it came to this. Now, the one hangup that still remains is tickets. So everyone who wants to ask me for tickets, and you run into this next week, I understand it's your burden, your cross to bear next week at the Players' Championship. Stop asking me for tickets. I don't have any. I don't have access to any. This is all I got. I can give you two tickets, and they went to my son and his girlfriend, and that's all I had.
Our dear sweet Noelle, who works with us, who has been fielding so many emails from me, thank you so much in advance.
Did you get sweet tickets? Did you?
No comment on that. We are still.
You got sweet tickets.
The sort of details that will pertain not just to the Players' Championship, right? It's a major championship. So, however sort of plight you have with the signature event on the PGA Tour, you need to intensify the sort of search and the desperation to get tickets to what is now being dubbed the fifth major by none other than the PGA Tour itself. Yes, the ticket request, the suite request, the grounds passes, the concert on Tuesday.
Parking.
Was ludicrous. Parking. Everyone wants to be involved. Hey, at least people are interested in going to PGA Tour events. At least people are interested in consuming our product.
Sure.
I guess it certainly could be worse. All right, we're going to get back to Bay Hill because there's certainly a lot to get into. Scottie Scheffler, Roy McIlroy, and the like. But we first have to start with the news of the day on Wednesday, and that was Luke Donald. I don't think in a move that would surprise anyone, deciding he is going to run it back, not for the second time, but for the third time. The announcement coming from the DP World Tour on Wednesday. Rex trying to make a little bit of history is Luke Donald next year at Adair Manor in Ireland. He would become the first captain on either side in the modern era to win three in a row. Bernard Gallagher won twice and tied the other in the late 80s. This would be the first time to win three outright, thus putting himself in a truly elite company on the Mount Rushmore. Your perspective, your insights, your thoughts on Luke Donald going back for a third three-peat.
I think my only question would be, why did we have to wait till March to get to this? I think everybody involved, including Luke Donald, every single one of the players on the European team, everyone on the European side said it that night in Bethpage last fall that, yes, of course we're going to have Luke back. Like, why wouldn't you? Is there someone else that you think is going to do a better job? He has a proven track record as a good captain, as a good leader, as a strategist. Everything that you need to be a good captain, and I have downplayed this in recent years because I truly believe that it's just like a football coach. Captains probably get too much blame in losses and too much credit in victories. I don't think Luke Donald gets too much credit, to be honest with you, because when you listen to the players, Roy McIlroy was just talking about it here following his pro-am round. He did everything right. There were no mistakes. There weren't anything we can nitpick when it comes to what Luke Donald did as a captain. Of course, he was coming back. I'm joking, of course. My guess is Luke wanted to take a minute, sort of think this through, talk it over with his family, think about what this could possibly mean to his legacy. Because honestly, you're right. He can make history. And I argued after Beth Page that he was the greatest captain of all time on either side.
Egan Bradley Rex said that Luke Donald was the greatest captain. He just lost to him at Beth Page.
And so he can add to that legacy, but you could also hurt it. I mean, if somehow the United States finds a way to do what it hasn't been able to do in decades and win an away Ryder Cup, I mean, that's going to tarnish it a little bit. It's not as though he's not going in the Hall of Fame as a Ryder Cup captain, as well as being a former world number one and everything else he accomplished in his career. But I think everybody was on board. This, as far as news goes, I don't think you and I woke up this morning flummoxed and just shocked that this happened. Of course, this was going to happen, and it's a very savvy move on the DP World Tour. I would equate it to, and I did this morning with some friends of ours from the PGA of America at breakfast, and they probably didn't take it as well as I hope you take it. I would equate this to two football teams going after the it coach, and Europe got Nick Saban, and it seems like the United States is waiting around for their version of Mike Norvell. Is that too mean? No?
I mean, is this Kalen DeBoer? Is that who you're equating a non Tiger Woods? I think
Kalen DeBoer would be even better than Mike Norvell, and I'm an FSU fan, and he's not what you would want. Sorry.
I like where you're going with this sort of metaphor. I'm with you. It makes too much sense for Luke Donald not to do it. There are, I guess, some difficulties with captaining a home Ryder Cup while still living in the States, responsibilities that he would have, the travel that he would have to endure. He's got young children who live in South Florida. His wife it's obviously an undertaking for her, making sure all of the T's are crossed, the I's are dotted, and that sort of thing. It was interesting. Luke Donald just did a taped interview with George Severinsen and Damon Hack on Golf Today, and George asked Luke, you know, would you attribute more of the European success to what you guys are doing week of, or more in the run-up to the competition? And Luke said he actually attributes more of the success to the run-up, which is his job. He's the one who's trying to make sure all the details are squared away. He's the one who's trying to make sure, along with his stats team led by Eduardo Molinari, that you know, the pairings are correct. They understand their purpose. They understand their commitment, the teamwork, wanting to play together. Those are all really integral roles of the captaincy. That's what Luke Donald has done so well over his two previous stints with this as well. And so having that same messaging, having that consistent, having that transfer, you know, almost, I guess genetically it did transfer from Rome to Beth Page. I would think in 2027, next year, there's going to be some new additions to that team. It's not going to be an identical 12 year over year as it relates to the European Ryder Cup team. And so there are obviously going to be some challenges for Luke Donald, but it makes too much sense. And the Europeans will be massive favorites at Adair Manor in Ireland, regardless of who they end up going up against. Do you anticipate now, Rex, that that's going to be Tiger Woods? There's sort of a soft deadline, aka ultimatum, that the PGA of America wanted to have Tiger Woods make a decision before the Masters in about a month's time. Do you think that's going to be Tiger? Or at this point, do you think it's going to be someone else?
Well, and before I get to that, I do want to circle back around. And when it comes to what the European Tour has done with Luke Donald, I hope this sets the standard, because over the last decade or so, the United States has had captains that they felt like, yes, this is the right combination. Davis Love, I felt like, was that captain who they could have kept on for maybe another match or even two. Why in the world is it a one and done? If you have a good captain, I think the United States has learned over the last few decades that maybe switching captains every 2 years, even though you're rewarding whoever the next guy up is, isn't necessarily what's best for the team, because the continuity that now Luke Donald can take over to Rome, you're absolutely right. They're going to be huge favorites. The only knock against them, and this is in the moment, and we're going to talk about this in a minute, is maybe John Rahm won't be eligible to play. And is that what the U.S. is banking their hopes on? Because you don't see much turnover on the U.S. side. We can look, point to some young players, and yes, there might be some players that don't have that scar tissue, but I don't think there's anyone right now that you would point to and be like, yeah, he's going to be the difference maker for the United States and Ireland. That person does not exist. That person as a captain does not exist, even if it's Tiger Woods. Now, I know there is going to be a cachet that comes with Tiger Woods if he does make that decision. And you're right. The PGA of America is sort of hanging all their hopes at this point that Tiger's going to come around and decide that, okay, the work that I've done for the PGA Tour, the future competitions committee, whatever the future schedule is going to look like, it's moved along to the point that I can now fixate on maybe something else, that maybe a Ryder Cup captaincy at Adair Manor, which is important to him. He has a very good relationship with the owner of that resort in Ireland, is something that I can bite off now. I do have the time. I have the energy to invest in that. Even if he does that, I'm not necessarily sure the odds change that much. Would you really, if Tiger announces tomorrow that, yep, I'm going to be next year's captain, would you change the odds of, let's throw a number out there, you're not very good at this, but let's go, the Europeans are favored at 40 to 1. Would you drop that to 10 to 1 or 20 to 1?
I think the odds would drop. I don't think that they necessarily should drop. And I actually think there's an interesting point to be made here because, look, I think it's Luke Donald's sort of initiative here that he cannot let the team get complacent. They've already won two in a row. Everyone thinks they're going to be big favorites playing at home. They haven't lost at home since 1993. He's going to guard against that in a big way. They're competing for history. They want to make Luke Donald win three in a row, the historical implications, all of that. I almost think it would help Rex if they did go up against Tiger Woods because it could help the European team lock in even more. Just the level of attention it's going to receive on the American side and people getting excited. And if you're the Europeans, let's knock back this narrative. Let's deliver arguably the greatest player of all time, an embarrassing defeat on foreign soil. Like, I think that could be a good motivation as well. Also, keep in mind, Rex, we have zero proof whatsoever that Tiger Woods would actually be a good captain.
That's not true. I'm going to stop you there. What he did in Australia as the President's Cup captain was impressive.
They were trailing heading into Sunday singles.
I think a win is a win. And if you look back on that, I mean, if we do a deep dive, and I don't want to do that.
They've lost once ever, and they almost lost in Australia.
I'll leave it to Shane Ryan to do the deep dive on the team room at the President's Cup in Australia. But there were some problems in that team room. And the problem's name was Patrick Reed. And it was an issue. Like, it's easy to say now, but I've heard from enough players, enough caddies, enough people that were in the room that he was an issue that week, and it was something that Tiger Woods had to deal with. Tiger Woods was also a playing captain. He wouldn't do that this time around.
He was the best player.
He could put his entire focus into being a captain. So there is at least a modicum that would suggest on his resume that, yes, he has the tools to pull this off, but it's an entirely different animal. And I'm kind of with you. You're right. The odds would change just because the folks in Vegas like to tinker with odds, but they probably shouldn't, at least not based on what we know to be true right now.
And anyone who has watched TGL this season knows that Tiger Woods does not have a great grasp of the hammer rule, despite being the captain, despite being the coach for Jupiter Stinks, which did qualify, I should say.
I see what you did there. Wow.
The TGL playoffs. So going up against Rory. Yes, that is absolutely a fever dream for TGL executives. I think you make such a great point, Rex, about how Luke Donald is breaking the mold, right? Of just because it was one captaincy, it's not someone else's turn. Like, you have to stay with what works. You have to stay with what the players want. And they have been very vocal over this past half decade. They want Luke Donald in this role. It's just amazing to think about the historical arc that this story has taken, because Luke Donald, remember, before Rome, was supposed to be passed over for Henrik Stenson. This was Henrik Stenson's captaincy. He was the captain, and he was stripped of his duties after moving to live. It's Luke Donald who stepped up. It's Luke Donald who has won two in a row. It's Luke Donald who is now getting a third chance. It's Luke Donald who could potentially become the greatest Ryder Cup captain of all time. It's Luke Donald who would now, I think, have a very credible case to be a part of the World Golf Hall of Fame. It's just an amazing story. I can't think of any player who has better utilized their 40s, which is sort of a dead zone for a competitive golfer, where you're sort of aged out of the PGA Tour. It's really hard to compete against the young guys. You have one eye on the future and maybe competing in the PGA Tour champions or doing something else, getting in design business, getting into TV, whatever it is. Luke Donald elevated what was already a great career as a playing professional in his 40s by devoting himself to this role and doing it so well. Obviously, Rex, one of the biggest decisions or complications that Luke Donald is going to have is what to do with one of his biggest stars, and that is John Rahm. If you missed it on Tuesday, Rahm, who was speaking ahead of the LIV event in Hong Kong, essentially doubled down on his decision to reject the offer that was presented from the DP World Tour that eight other LIV players accepted. As a reminder, with that deal that those eight players accepted, they had to drop their current appeals, they had to pay their outstanding fines, and they had to agree to play six DP World Tour events, which is an increase by two events than the tour minimum. That's really the part that John Rahm bristled at, said essentially the European Tour is, quote, extorting players. Do you think he has a point?
He does not have a point. It's such a gaslighting, ridiculous argument. And he's mad. To clarify here, you're right. They extended it to six events that they had to play. Two of those, the additional two events, essentially, if you want to call on that, the European Tour gets to decide where the players are going to land. John Rahm's argument, I guess, could be valid if he wasn't playing for LIV Golf, which also dictates that he has to play in 14 events. So it just doesn't make any sense. You can't make the argument on both sides. And also, John Rahm has made some ridiculous arguments in the past where he feels like he has wronged because he refused to take any responsibility for what he did, and he violated the European Tour's policy, just like, for example, Brooks Koepka violated the PGA Tour's policy. And that's why Brooks Koepka, with the returning member program, was able to swallow the things that the PGA Tour wanted him to swallow, paying the $5 million fine, essentially. Admitting that, okay, I'm not going to be allowed to get into the signature events unless I play myself into them. We saw last week the perfect example of why that was a good move by the PGA Tour, because Brooks was the highlight of that field at PGA National. It's going to be the same thing at Valspar in 2 weeks, the same thing in 3 weeks in Houston where Brooks shows up there. You don't necessarily have to sit here and admit that I was wrong, but you can, like the other eight members of LIV Golf who accepted this deal with the European Tour. They acknowledge that for the best of their careers, for the knowledge of the best of the European Tour, and for the best of the Ryder Cup, we're going to go ahead and do this. It's not as though you need to come back with your tail between your legs, because I don't think that's what Brooks has done. He simply acknowledged the fact that based on the policy the PGA Tour had, that, okay, I'll accept these sanctions. That's all Rahm has to do, and it seems like a really weird hill for him to die on.
I certainly agree with that. I do think John Rahm has some validity to the concerns that he expressed. It does seem what the DP World Tour is doing somewhat capricious in nature, like is the two additional tournaments, the four is the minimum term appearance to be a member, you know, is the two extra tournaments some sort of penance for damaging the DP World Tour? I think it's similar, Rex, to how the PGA Tour has operated over these past couple years, isn't it? Making it slightly harder for the defectors to come back, essentially punishing them for the decision and weakening, as a result, the PGA Tour or the DP World Tour in this respect, which does have a strategic alliance. That is their right as a tour to enforce any rules that they want. The eight LIV players deem those rules and regulations and requirements, okay, I don't like it, but I'm going to suck it up and do it. John Rahm is essentially saying, I don't want to do it. I only want to do four tournaments. You need to bend the rules to me. I don't like how that's sort of coming off.
No, and again, you're making an argument out of one side of your mouth when in fact you're doing the exact same thing for LIV Golf. And you can say, well, it's because he's being paid millions and millions of dollars. Okay, that's fine. But you can't make an argument that the European Tour is not allowed to dictate my schedule while your employer at LIV Golf does exactly that thing. And I will also argue on the other side of this that the PGA Tour's conflicting event release policy, which is essentially at the heart of this, does allow for adjustments. For example, way back in the day, Ernie Els played a lot of events around the world, and you only get X number of these conflicting event releases over the course of the year. However, if you need an extra one, the PGA Tour would make Ernie Els add an extra five events, five starts for what was already probably a pretty busy schedule. If you wanted one more, if you wanted two more, you had to add another five on top of that. Ernie Els and every other player have always done that. The PGA Tour, the European Tour, they need to be able to protect their product. I'm not saying that they can be completely restrictive in what players do. And like, this transitions really nicely into whatever the PGA Tour schedule may look like going forward, because the idea in Ponte Vedra right now is they want this condensed schedule and they want to be able to guarantee everyone will play all 20 or 25 events. And I don't see how we get there, because that, in my mind, is a step too far. But in this particular case, I just don't buy his argument at all.
The only other point that I would make on this is those two additional mandated tournaments, which will come at the DP World Tour's discretion. I have not seen what those tournaments would be from their perspective. I find it really hard to believe that they would make those two additional tournaments really inconvenient for Jon Rahm to play in terms of, you know, is it going to be the week before the Masters? Is it going to be on the heels of six in a row that he would have to play ordinarily? Jon Rahm has already outlined the four or five tournaments that he'd like to play, and they typically come after the LIV golf season ends in August, and that's totally fine. The two additional tournaments, I just have a very hard time believing with this argument that they're extorting them and that they're trying to use them to benefit their tournaments while also punishing them for the decision that they made a couple of years ago. They want to help boost those tournaments as well, Rex. And so why would excluding Jon Rahm from those tournaments or having an inconvenient time in the schedule be beneficial to the DP World Tour? I don't understand that argument as well. And so I think Rahm really just comes off as stubborn in this. You made the point that he's used to being contracted to play each and every one of the 14 LIV tournaments. And so his argument that I don't want to be told when and where I have to play completely falls flat. And secondly, you either care about the Ryder Cup or you don't. And it just seems like such an unnecessary own goal to dig in and alienate golf fans, alienate European Ryder Cup fans, alienate his potential European Ryder Cup teammates. It just seems like maybe he's doing it for pride. Maybe he's for doing it for principle. It seems like he needs to get some outside voices in sort of his corner and be like, what you're doing, how you think it's actually being played off is not actually how it's going.
And that was our friend Eamon Lynch's column on golfweek.com. The idea that he seems to be getting bad advice, whoever's giving him that advice. And to back up just a minute, I think the European Tour has proven throughout this entire process, much more so than the PGA Tour, to be pliable when it comes to these conversations. I mean, they're the ones that opened the door for the LIV players to come back almost immediately. That if you're a member of the PGA, the European Tour that went to LIV Golf, you could maintain your membership. They weren't going to take it from you. There was going to be fines for every LIV event you played in it. My guess is Guy Kennings, the chief executive, would do exactly what you're saying. He would sit down with Jon Rahm and his representatives, and they would come up with those two additional events that didn't conflict with any LIV events and that fit into John's schedule as best as possible.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I don't think it'll come to a situation where Jon Rahm will not be playing at the Ryder Cup in 2027, that he would be on the sidelines, that he'd be watching from home. Depends how dug in he's going to be. You would think Luke Donald would want him on the team. And I think at this point, it's Jon Rahm's decision. How bad do you actually want to be there and be a part of the team? Or do you want to continue having this public relations nightmare, which is what has been ever since he appealed the fines? All right, let's transition to the PGA Tour, the signature event, the tennis courts that you are at, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Scottie Scheffler has been in the media center on Wednesday, Rory McIlroy as well. I first want to start with Scotty. I had the cognizant off, played three in a row, played Phoenix, played Pebble, played Riv, played well, not great. I think it all comes down to how he has started, Rex, in his last three tournaments, 72 or worse in the opening round in his last three events. What say you about Scotty? Will that streak end? Will he get back in the winner's circle? Or will his streak of finishes outside the top 10 be pushed from 1 to 2?
I don't find Scotty Scheffler to be like a big talker. He's not big on bragging. He knows he's the world number one. He knows he can do things that other players can't do. But he had a bit of a moment during the press conference today. And it was based off the stat that I think you threw out on Monday when you and I were on Golf Today, that you pointed out correctly so, that we're talking a lot about a very small sample size when it comes to his starts to tournaments on Thursdays, his scoring average, his struggle on Thursdays. And you pointed out that last year on the PGA Tour, he actually led the tour in first round scoring. Scotty took it in a bit of a flex a bit further. His line was, last year, I led the tour in first round, second round, third round, and third round,
fourth round.
And he threw the fingers out there as well. He had to walk us through it. So it was a bit of a flex on his part. And I tend to agree because as hard as you and I have both tried, there is no good explanation about what happens on Thursday other than golf. Sometimes golf just gets you. It's not as though Scotty Scheffler shows up on Thursday and is unprepared. I can guarantee you, I don't know much in life. I can guarantee you that's not happening. He is prepared. But he goes out and Goff sometimes gets you. Sometimes you get a bad bounce. Sometimes the putts don't drop. Sometimes wind gusts get you. Whatever the case may be, there is a rub to it. However, you look what he's done the other three rounds. He's been very much Scotty Scheffler. And you had another good stat. I think his highest opening round score here at Bay Hill is 71. So if you're putting me on the hook, as in, is it going to be over 71 on Thursday or under? I'm going to pick under.
Yeah, I think that's the fair point. And like, this is such a small sample size. And look, this is probably going to get clipped and aggregated if it ends up blowing up spectacularly in my face.
Don't do it in a rejoin, Mercer. Don't do that to him.
Because I'm completely dismissing this as a statistical anomaly, that there's nothing going on here. The Thursday thuds are nothing like the Freaky Fridays that Roy McIlroy had back in 2014. It wasn't Rex that Scotty led the PGA Tour in first-round scoring average in 2025. It's that Scotty Scheffler has led the PGA Tour in first-round scoring average each of the last 3 years. And so I think Scotty is right in looking at the big picture and not trying to blow it up, not trying to overanalyze this, not trying to find holes where things do not necessarily exist. Like, he's still doing plenty well. You can look at any statistic you want. You can look, besides the first round scoring average, like, he's still first in overall scoring average. He's still converting a lot of his greens regulation into birdies. He's tops in the tour in that respect. He just needs to start faster. And we don't really have a culprit. There's no real common theme for what he has been doing. It's not like he putts terribly in the opening round and then sort of continues it out. I do think it is a little bit of bad breaks, maybe some bad momentum that seems to flow. I will be very keen to be paying attention this week to Scotty Scheffler's iron play. Because if there has been sort of a defining characteristic of his 2026, again, and keep in mind, he already has won a golf tournament. He won the American Express. I know the final margin of victory was about 4 shots. It could have been 6 or 7, if not for a late double bogey. His iron play has not quite been Scotty Scheffler-esque. You look, he's been 114th, the PGA Tour in proximity to the hole, hasn't been really sharp inside 150. That is going to even out, obviously, as the year progresses. He's the best ball striker we have seen since Tiger Woods. He is going to eventually lead the PGA Tour in that category. But if you're looking for why maybe he's not winning golf tournaments by 2 or 3, maybe why he's finishing a shot out of the playoff in a couple of instances, I pin it mostly down to his iron play. It's going to be a huge test this week with the firmness of the golf course. At Bay Hill, needing to put the ball in the fairway as well, the correct sections on what are dead greens. Obviously, next week at the Players' Championship, TPC Sawgrass, a classic quintessential A to B style golf course when it's overseeded like it is, really needing to position yourself, being precise with your approach shots. It's going to pop up over these next couple weeks. I have full confidence that Scotty Scheffler, in the week off between Riviera and Bay Hill, has addressed that deficiency. He's not dumb. It's a small sample size. I think we'll get back to what Scotty has done well since 2022 when this run began. Anything else, Rex, that you're particularly interested in watching this week at Arnie's Place, which I know you love. You love this tournament. You love the hosts. You love the tournament officials. You love the volunteers. You love the parking. You love the food. You love the course.
I cleaned it up.
It's all great.
I did all right. I think I saved it. It was a kick save and a beauty. It has nothing to do with the tournament itself. It's all the ancillary stuff around it. You'll experience it next week. You're very much aware. Mercer, please clip that diatribe that Lavender just went through, and let's replay that on Thursday when Scotty opens with a 75. Let's make sure we get that on social media. There's actually two things I wanted to bring up real quick. I was doing a show this morning on Vissen about betting, looking ahead to this week, and I was asked about two specific players. One, Colin Morikawa. We know how close he came last year here, and he's clearly playing better. He's already won this year on the PGA Tour. That would be a player I'd really keep an eye on this week because it favors what he does best, that long iron play. It forces almost everybody into playing from the same position. And he is the best when it comes to, even better than Scotty statistically, when he is at his best. And the other one was Tommy Fleetwood, who I like for a lot of different reasons. But in my mind, I immediately envisioned if anyone should win Arnold Palmer's cardigan, who is it going to look better on than Tommy Fleetwood? I think I've actually seen him wearing cardigans, not having won one here at Bay Hill. But is there anyone you can think of that would look better than Tommy Fleetwood in that particular winner's cardigan?
No, I agree. And now that he doesn't have a clothing sponsor, it wouldn't be egregious or an eyesore as well. It could be very understated. Could be a very, very classy look. Tommy Fleetwood has had a couple good starts to his 2026, even though he has not won. That's a good call on Tommy Fleetwood as well. Obviously, Rory has not won yet. He has won this golf tournament before back in 2018. A couple other players I'd keep an eye on, Rex. I'm very curious to see Jake Knapp, who has been popping up on leaderboards, at least on the West Coast swing. Nikolai Højgaard as well. He's had a couple of opportunities to win golf tournaments. Xander Schauffele, bit of quiet year and a half, I would say, for Xander Schauffele. Peaked his head a little bit on the West Coast swing. He did win in Japan. This was the tournament in which he returned from his rib issue last year and sort of kicked off what was a steady, if an unspectacular 2025. I'm also keen to see Justin Thomas. This is the first time we've seen Justin Thomas compete since the Ryder Cup last fall. Has not played a PGA Tour event since the Pro Car Championship at the beginning of September. Has been dealing with a microdiscectomy. Curious to see how Justin Thomas deals with that. Couple odds and ends before we get out of here on this midweek edition. Rex and I always love hearing from you guys. YouTube user 2024TY thought had a great suggestion, Rex, about a podcast segment, about sort of like an underrated story of the week. So I'm going to start implementing that on the Sunday shows moving forward. Any other ideas? This is a great week to let us know. Hit us up in the YouTube comments section. We get some of the best ideas from you guys, the listeners, the viewers. Certainly appreciate that. I do want to give a quick shout out, Rex, to Jeff from Jarrett Gordon Lincoln in Winter Haven, Florida. He's a fan of the podcast. I'm a fan of his great customer service. Appreciate him helping my wife and I out with getting a new vehicle in the household. Also, a few reminders. We're going to try to go live. Yes. Got to thank Jeff. A few reminders. Going to try to go live on Sunday night on YouTube after the Arnold Palmer Invitational. We also have some exciting stuff planned for next week's Players Championship that I'll hopefully have more details on that in a couple of days when Rex and I get together on Sunday night. In the meantime, you guys know the drill, golfchannel.com for all the latest news, notes, and updates. Rex is going to be out there all week. Brentley Romine as well for all the news, features, and analysis your heart can desire. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday night, YouTube edition, going live.